I am on cold medicine, so this is going to be a fun time for everyone involved, I think. Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing the 2021 historical fantasy novel, She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. This book is kind of, I was talking about with my mom on the phone the other day, and I was trying to think about how to describe it. And I was like, it's kind of like a gritty Mulan.
Mm-hmm.
In the it's not a very good way of putting it, because it's a very, I feel like it's a very surface level way of putting it. But
yeah, it's not necessarily Mulan, but culturally we'll be most familiar with Mulan.
Yes.
In terms of what the story is.
It's about a Chinese woman who disguises herself as a man to defeat the Mongols who have conquered China. So it's set during the Yuan Dynasty, and the main character, the name she goes by is Zhu Zhongba.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the main characters. The other main character is the Mongolian general.
Ouyang.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ouyang. So it's kind of about the two of them. So they're both kind of gender nonconforming, because Zhu is pretending to be a man. I don't really think she doesn't identify as a man. Like,
she doesn't. She also doesn't really identify as a woman either.
No. But she uses, like, kind of when her internal monologue seems to be female pronouns. So that's why we're using female pronouns.
Yeah. But she's just vibing with gender.
Yeah. She's definitely, like, somewhere on the kind of non-binary spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then Ouyang is
a eunuch through violence.
A eunuch because his family disrespected the Mongolian emperor. And rather than kill all the male, I guess, family members, they decided to spare him by ridding him of his manhood, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of lives in the society not seen as male or female in the kind of Mongolian culture, even though he is a general.
And he's gay.
And he is gay. He's in love with his prince that he serves.
Essen,
who, big dumb chat guy.
For he's real.
He's just like a lovable puppy, that Essen. He's trying so hard to be like Ouyang's like best friend and like, I don't know, you just feel bad for him because Ouyang's planning to betray him the whole time.
I feel bad for him in a sense, but there's only so much badness I can feel for him. Because he does, many times he does behave kind of carelessly around Ouyang. Like, he should be aware of the effect he has, and he's not.
Yeah.
And for someone who grew up with this person who, in many aspects, he did create Ouyang's entire career. He saved his life many times in terms of, like, political machinations and such. So he loves him.
Yeah.
But he's careless with him, too, with his emotions and his well-being. It's a very, like, patronizing sort of love in a way.
Yes.
And I don't know, like, I dig it, but I like these sort of relationships. I think you do too, because it reminds me a lot of like Baru.
Yes, definitely. Definitely a relationship. So that's what I wanted to compare it to first, actually, is Baru, because it's like very much focused on this idea that like kind of all relationships are fundamentally unequal on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Like each partner has gained something different out of it. And this is true for Ouyang and Essen, as well as Zhu and Ma Yingzi.
Yeah, who, like, we haven't mentioned Ma, but she's the best.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
So she is, so, okay, quick plot summary. So it, like, starts with Zhu during her childhood, and basically her family, they're peasants, they're starving to death, the rest of her family dies, She goes to a monastery, taking on her brother's identity, and becomes a monk. Then Ouyang, the Mongolian general, comes and destroys the monastery right on the eve of Zhu becoming a monk. Zhu then joins the rebels, called the Red Turbans, and then, like, kind of... She has the... So there's kind of this also this fantastical component, too. She can see ghosts, and I guess she uses that to her advantage. So after a couple of, like, big military victories, kind of she uses that to become a commander. Long story short, Ouyang and Zhu are kind of on a collision course. They both kind of harmed each other. Ouyang by destroying the monastery, Zhu by handing Ouyang a very devastating and humiliating military defeat. But Zhu is trying to consolidate power within the rebels, and so she marries Ma Yingzi, who is... How would you describe her? Let me ask you that.
She's a Sami. That's how I would describe her.
Okay.
She's a very loving, hopeful kind of person, despite the hardships that life brings her.
Yeah.
She's also very intelligent, if not somewhat naive. Anyone listening to this, like, this is spoilers. Starting now, there's a million spoilers. I will immediately spoil everything. But yeah. I feel like she is not on Zhu's side in the end at all. I feel like Zhu just taught her to be more cautious with the love she gives out. Yeah. Because that was a weird turncoat for her personality. And at the very end, when she joins Zhu, at like in that procession where Zhu took over.
Basically by killing a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. And Ma, she kind of did a very similar thing that Ouyang does. You know what I mean? Like,
what is that?
It feels like she's going to be biding her time for the correct moment to strike.
Okay.
That's what it felt like to me, but I don't know.
I don't know. I know, okay, because I'm looking at the wiki. I know that Zhu and Ma are kind of loosely based on historical figures who were the founders of the Ming Dynasty.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It would be, okay, so no matter what happens, it would be subverting some sort of trope. Because on one hand, if she does in fact want to join Zhu fully and wholeheartedly, despite the violence, it's fun to watch someone like her lose her way. But also, as people, we understand that that's how these things work historically, yeah. Right? So, like, that's interesting because it's unfamiliar. But also, if she does betray Zhu, there's that idea of we're so used to the hero of a book getting the love interest and to have the hero become the villain and the love interest become the avenger of that person in a sense, right? Like, that's also so interesting. So no matter what happens, I think I'll be satisfied.
Okay. Because this is the first of, I think there's supposed to be a second book.
There has to be.
Yes. I don't think there's going to be a trilogy. I think I saw that was a duology.
I'm down with that.
Okay. Not everything has to be a trilogy.
Yeah, I don't mind a good duology.
Yeah.
We have Kiyoshi, which I'm yet to finish, but, you know, that's also a duology.
Jeez. Okay, so you think, your thought is that Ma is kind of, at the end, planning against Zhu.
That's the vibes I've got, just because, like, I don't know, a lot of it seemed, she's so emotional and, like, in a good way, and I feel like that'll hurt her so much. I don't know, Zhu deeply hurt her at the end.
Oh, definitely.
Like, deeply, deeply, deep in her soul hurt her.
I think it's very fascinating because it's very interesting to me because I feel like if, on the one hand, I was shocked that Zhu would just kill a child like that. Like, it felt like it came out of nowhere. And then you, like, look back at it and you're like, no, actually.
No, it was Zhu, set up.
Zhu just is like a Machiavellian hero. All she cares about is her own greatness and how she's going to get there.
And she's done that the entire book.
Yeah. It's about her making these kind of deals and selling out the people, maybe not always people that she loves, but people that she trusts or respects or people who are innocent, at least. And like that monk teacher at her at the monastery that she basically frames
mm-hmm.
and gets him thrown out because he finds out that she's a girl.
And in the moment, sorry to keep interrupting you.
No, go.
Like, in the moment, we understand the panic, the act, why she would do that, right? Because it is life or death for her. But then as the book keeps going, it gets harder to understand.
Yeah, and that's the part. And like, she starts sacrificing more and more until the point where at the end she just... And I like how savage it is that, like, the child dying, like, I mean, you see it coming because she's talking to the child and she tells him basically, like, when you come back in your next life, you'll hear, you know, tales about my glory, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the actual death of the child, Ma just, like, overhears about it from a soldier or guard or someone. He's just like, oh, yeah, he died. We're going to have a funeral for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just finished the mourning period. And it's just like, dang. Like, that's what it's become. And I think it's really interesting because for so long, Ouyang is presented as kind of the antagonist. And I feel like it's debatable who the antagonist is in this. I don't really know who it is.
Yes, because we see Ouyang bide his time. Yeah. And really, like, he does plan on betraying SN and that empire. What is it called? West something? What do they call it?
I don't know. It's the Yuan Dynasty. They're Mongolians.
Yeah, they had like a name for it, like West something, I think.
I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so he does intend and always has intended, and he's finally in a position where he's able to kind of enact that betrayal, that revenge for his people. And by the end, he's like the better person in a sense, because with Ouyang, he was placed in that position without his consent, right? As a child, he was mutilated. And then everything about where he's at in life is from the fact that his family was slaughtered. So he really had no choice. Whereas Zhu, she created the situation for herself and she thrives in it, right? So at the end, like, I do feel that Ouyan is the more forgivable person in a sense because...
I mean, he still does some pretty bad thing. I guess he kills a lot of Essen's family kind of underhandedly.
Yeah. He kills Essen's dad, who is like one of the higher ups, which is part of his whole like revenge shtick anyway.
Yeah.
And maybe the reason for it is not necessarily revenge. It's still like... The effort and vibe is there.
The vibe is there. The vibe for murder.
The vibes. I don't know, like, I would forgive him more than I could forgive Zhu for Zhu's actions.
Fair.
Because with Zhu, we actually have way more people that she kind of, not sacrifices, but steps over. We don't get to see Ouyang step over people. We see him in his position already, solidified, and we actually see him behave quite admirably in some moments when he's training his soldiers and he, like, gets rid of lieutenants and captains that are not able to lead.
Yeah.
Like, in a sense, he is...
Although very brutally, so...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's very little kindness in this book, but, like... There's somewhat... The logistics of Ouyang's actions stem from a very, very brutal past.
Yeah.
And a lack of agency. Whereas in Zhu's past, it's still a pretty upsetting childhood and origin. But she has so much more agency. And she thrives in it. She really, really loves her power. I don't know. This book stressed me out.
Oh, yeah.
In, like, such a good way.
Okay, let me ask you this. Who's your favorite character?
I'm always a fan of Asami. Mai is great, okay. But like she's not in it enough.
Yeah.
So I'll go with Ouyang, although I do like Zhu Da, and I mean Zhu is excellent. Zhu Da is the best friend, right? I'm not mixing up names.
He's
the monk that knows her
identity. Yeah, Zhu Da. Yeah, the older brother. Yeah. Quote unquote, that's what she calls him.
Yeah, so I'll go with Ouyang because he has like I don't know, there's more depth to him. Because with Zhu, we know what she's about.
Yeah.
Whereas with him, he's so conflicted.
He really is. He's struggling. So it's very fascinating. And I feel like there's more to him we haven't learned yet.
Absolutely.
Like, there was some hint that there was some deeper secret. Did you get that sense that there's something else he's hiding?
I definitely feel like...
There was some comment about that, about why he was wearing so many clothes. And there were just some other comments that was just like, it feels like he's hiding something else.
There's a little bit of that. I don't know about the clothes. To me, the clothes felt more so just that, he doesn't like how his body looks because of, being a eunuch and the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there is something.
Is there, a more politically correct term for eunuch, by the way?
I it feels weird to say it every time.
That's what they call him in the book. So I guess that's, Wikipedia says a eunuch is a male who has been castrated. I don't know.
I guess that's the term. Fine.
Yeah.
I've never heard
if we're using
it.
The wrong term for this, please let us know. Cause we're not trying to be awful. We just don't know.
Yeah. He does have ghosts following him, right? And
yes.
To me, it was very clear that that is his, that's his ancestors haunting him until he accomplishes his mission.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there's way more to that than just, him doing the mission or whatever.
I completely agree. I think there's more going on with the ghosts. There's gotta be.
I really hope it's some sort of thing that is able to stand against that, the flame that a lot of these characters in power have.
Yeah, so apparently I didn't mention this, there's the flame that's the mandate of heaven, and it's a literal flame that people who have it can conjure. So the emperor, the current emperor can do it, but only Sparks, because he's losing the claim to the throne, I guess. And the child that Zhu has killed can do it. And then it turns out at the end, Zhu can do it as well.
Who can do it?
Zhu.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I thought you said a third name. I'm like, who? What?
No. Well, no, three different people can do it.
Yeah.
The emperor, the kid, Zhu.
There's also that lady that sleeps with that general in one scene.
Oh, yeah.
She can also do it. Hers is Red or something, or...
What was her name? I forget.
I don't remember. She was in there so quick.
Yeah. I wonder what her deal is.
I'm excited. She's gonna be evil. What did you think about the pacing?
That's a good question. It does... Okay. I'm trying to think about the pacing. I mean, it does spend... A lot of the book is spent at the monastery, maybe even an excessive amount, but I don't know. It feels like the last part is very fast.
It is. It speeds up. Yeah. I don't know if... I think I like it.
Yeah, it was a good read.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that... The last kind of battle over that last city felt like it happened very quickly compared to the other kind of... sequences of political and military maneuvers, and I don't know if that could have breathed a couple more pages, but that's just nitpicking. And now I'm wondering if the monastery was too long. That's the only thing, but it didn't feel too long. What about you?
Yeah, I was gonna say it felt very correct. It was startling to have the monastery just burn down like that. I felt that moment of, oh, now that's literally lost forever. Okay. And yeah. It happened just like that, and that's all it is. I also really like how that setting was used to introduce Ouyang, because I don't know, there was just something very satisfying about how about seeing him through Zhu's eyes for the first time, just the way that she recognized him as a person that they have something in common, and the dislike, the immediate kind of disgust with each other. I don't know, there's just something very cool about that, and it's very interesting. And I know that I mentioned this before, off mic when we were just chatting, but it does remind me of Nine Fox Gambit a lot.
Okay.
And even though that's based on, Korean mythology, there's still that aspect of like Eastern mythology, and like a lot of it is just refreshing because some elements of the story work a little differently. And that was really cool. Who's your favorite character? I don't think you answered that question.
It's tough.
Toph is from Avatar, not this book.
Okay, episode over. Thank you for tuning in. I mean, I like Essen. I like a golden retriever, Himbo. Like, he's what, I don't know. I feel like everyone else in this book is scheming. Like,
he's so everyone dumb. Else,
he's so dumb, and you just need that there. And I kind of like that, because he's definitely something that kind of makes the whole, every other character scheming kind of revolve around. Because you just have this good boy who just wants to, like, he just wants to fight the battles and impress his father. And
get a boyfriend. He wants a boyfriend.
He's got, because he's got multiple wives.
And he doesn't like them.
He seems to hate them. Like, he seems so annoyed by them.
And he literally took this guy and, like, gave him a job so that they can always be together. Like, if that's not nepotism, I don't know what is.
And there's definitely a moment where Ooyang totally could have hooked up with Essen, but chickened out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Essen is madly in love with him. Yes. And then Ooyang is like a useless lesbian. He's like, what is flirting? What does that mean? He's just my buddy. I wish he liked me. And it's like, bro. Bro.
It reminds me of this relationship post from Reddit where this guy was like, so my roommate and I, like, sometimes we sleep together and we fall asleep and he kisses me and, like, blah, 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 all this other stuff, and introduces me as his boyfriend. And I think we're dating but I'm not gay. And it's just like, okay, dude, whatever. You know, like, it's really ridiculous.
But it's even funnier because Young is gay.
Yes.
And he is like, hate women.
Yeah.
Like this guy. Everyone in this book is, like, socially inept, but is also extremely competent.
Well, it's interesting because it's just, like, also the way social interactions are expected to happen in this society. And it's, like, this weird combination because, like, this is the fascinating thing. Because you've got kind of these Chinese cultural practices of the 14th century, and it's a very rigid kind of social structure, mm-hmm. where, like, and I think Ooyang follows that kind of much more strictly than Essen, and that's really clear. And, like, I don't know, just like everything that Ooyang says has to be very deferential. And, you know, you see Zhu, who won't even refer to herself in first person when
as
she's as a monk, and all these weird kind of, not weird, but like foreign to a Western audience kind of cultural relationships. But then you also have the Mongolian side of things, because, you know, like the emperor and his cadre are, mm-hmm. are Mongolians, which it seems to be a much more, I don't know, they've kind of been, would the word be Sinified? Like, they've kind of adopted a lot of Chinese practices, but, like, also they're still Mongolians, mm-hmm. and they've kind of got that golden horde element side of things. And so, like, it's really this interesting duality of, like, some characters, like Essen, really just want Ooyang to be, like, a genuine friend. And Ooyang is just incapable of doing that because, you know, for multiple reasons. But there's also this, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm just, like, the culture of it is very interesting. And I'd love to learn more about how, like, I don't know, I need to find a YouTube video explaining how, like, the social structure of Yuan China worked. And watch that.
I think I get what you're saying. Both main characters have that sort of, like, power structure that is against them in a way that has them be at a lower tier than a lot of the other characters. And they grow into that power, right? And they also have very big secrets that they're hiding. And that secret being released is the end to a much bigger fate than just their existence.
Yeah.
So it's like these two things together, and also the fact that, like, they want to climb the ladder, and to do that they have to play the game. And they have to play the game in a way that's different than a lot of other people who are already in power have to play it because those people are already there, right? And usually those people are there through family. And it's very interesting. And in a lot of moments, it was very frustrating too, mostly yeah. from Ouyang's point of view. For example, Essen's brother, like his story is also very sad because he is adopted into the family and he's not the favorite son. And yeah. truly, like, that was one of the things that's like the only criticism I have of this book, honestly. The fact that Essen's family are just such bros, they're such chads. Yeah. Like, I couldn't believe that. Like, I couldn't believe that his father didn't see the importance of bureaucracy. Like, that was the one thing that took me out of the narrative. Just because it's really weird for someone who's been in power for that long to not notice, like, to not know that bureaucracy is really the thing that controls.
It struck me as very, like, have you seen Game of Thrones?
I've seen some of it.
There's the who are the people? Oh, God, I forget. But, like, I think it does have some historical basis. Some, you know, like, Mongolian chieftains believe that, like, the way of the Mongolian life was to conquer and not to worry, you know, leave the ruling to the people that they conquered. So I guess it has that basis. But again, this novel seems to be set after a period after kind of the Mongolian conquests are largely over. Now they're just rulers.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been very, you know, they've integrated themselves into Chinese society. And so it is, I agree with you, it is strange that the father and Essen to an extent, like there's the part where Essen gets really mad that like his brother has written something
in different language.
Yeah, in a Chinese script, not a Mongolian script. Yeah, it is weird that the dad just does not seem to understand that like their role is to rule, not just to conquer. I don't know. That's a good point.
Yeah, but I think that's the only moment where I was like unable to really, like the only moment that took me out of the book. Because I listened to it. I didn't read. I did the audiobook. Okay. And
how was the audiobook?
It was really good. The narrator yeah. was great. Yeah, it was a really good listen. But that was the only time when I was like, what?
Yeah.
So I paused and like got a little distracted with it and then had to like rewind and whatever. But I think that's the only scene where that happened because I finished the book in like 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, you went through it quick. Like I mentioned it to Val and then like 72 hours later, she was done.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive for an audiobook too. Like
it was like 14 hours, I think.
Yeah. That's a lot of audiobook to consume over a couple days.
I listen at like a 1.3 speed just because I think like the regular speed is too slow for me. I get bored.
Mm.
But even then, it took a bunch of my day. But
okay,
I was
my problem. Okay, we're going to talk about this now because you brought this up. I know a lot of people do the like faster speed for podcasts and audiobooks. I can't do it. Like, I do get bored and I understand why people do it, but when you speed it up, it just feels like things, I don't know, I feel like something is lost. Like you lose the tempo that was like deliberate and then I feel too rushed.
That's fair. I can see that. I also feel like I have ADD and if there's a cadence, I tend to zone out.
Okay.
So when it's sped up a little bit, it feels just inhuman enough for me to be aware of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just uncanny enough where I'm engaged.
Fair. I did one time. Okay. I like to fall asleep to YouTube videos. And usually it's like, okay, we're digressing so much, but whatever. This
it is what it is.
Story. Yeah, it is what it is. This is our podcast. We can digress. And I'm on cold medicine, so I'm all over the place. So I like to fall asleep to YouTube videos. And usually it's like a dude with a dulcet voice talking about a video game for like 3 hours. I don't know why, but these things just put me to sleep. It doesn't matter. I'm just out.
I get it.
Instantaneously,
yeah.
Like within 5 minutes of putting the video on. But while I was sleeping once, Benny stepped on the keyboard and turned the speed up to 1.5. And I had the most like anxiety producing nightmare that night. And I think it was because the guy was talking too fast.
It at first, it is very uncanny. It's like, it feels human enough, but also very like, it. Yeah, anxious is a good word for it.
Yeah.
It just feels extremely anxious. But also, I don't know, after a while you kind of get used to it. And it's given me enough, I've listened to things sped up enough that now it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't listen to everything sped up. So I had a lot of difficulty with listening to audiobooks in the beginning. I only started listening to audiobooks maybe a year or two ago. And unlike podcasts, I could not focus.
Yeah.
I think I started, one of the first books I read, I think I started it over like 4 or 5 times and re-listened to the same chapter. Like, what book was it? It was either Haunting of Hill House or Ancillary. And those two books I really like. And I could not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
But after I sped it up a little bit, like, it was a little easier to stay connected to the narrative. And then for audiobooks specifically, I do speed it up. And for example, if someone's playing like a game on YouTube and I'm watching it kind of half-heartedly while doing other stuff, I speed that up as well. But podcasts, I tend to listen on regular just because like for podcasts, it's a little more engaging. It's not like there's no rhythm to it. It's just people chatting usually.
Yeah.
So that's a little easier to like get hooked on.
Interesting. Okay. Anyway, back to our discussion of the book. Okay. What was your favorite scene? Let's start with that.
My favorite scene.
Yeah. Or like moment or like sequence.
Okay. I know what it is. I really liked Ma asking Zhu to keep, what's his name, safe? Ma's fiance.
Yeah.
The rude boy. And then the scene immediately after is him getting just like betrayed.
Yeah.
I don't know, something about that kind of like helplessness in the moment from every party involved.
Yeah, because
like, no one
Zhu wants to do something about it but can't.
She's also whipped a little bit.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I'll do whatever Ma asks me to. She's hot.
Yeah.
So her failing to save, what is his name? It's like Great Something? No?
Yeah, God,
we're excellent.
Great Gao, isn't it like G A U?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds rightish.
Oh God,
like Zhu not being able to do what Ma asked her to do.
Yeah,
and then Great Boy thinking that he did something really good, and like his friend knowing that he did do something that was very impressive. And then it turns out that that was the plan the whole time, using that course of action as a way to show that he is a traitorous person, which we know he's not.
Right.
Like, he is a very loyal general, if not a great human.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, I think it's the first time we really see the brutality of this book. Like, no one gets away clean.
Yeah.
And after that, that's when things speed up. And I really liked that scene. How about you?
Oh. Okay, so I feel like there's the scene that I liked when I was reading it and the scene that I liked in retrospect.
Okay.
And the scene I liked when I was reading it had to be when Zhu meets with the child, I don't remember what his name was. The child had some title, fancy title. Basically, he's the kind of figurehead of the rebels, mm-hmm. but like he's a child, so no one, he isn't actually the head of the rebels. And Zhu is having this like crisis of like identity. And at the end, the child says to her, like, why are the ghosts so mad at you?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that moment because it's so true. And it just felt like this child was saying to Zhu, like, I know, I can see who you are. And it just set off this, like, I don't know, you could just tell it was just, like, probably terrifying to Zhu.
Yeah. There are a few scenes where she is almost discovered.
Yes.
And all of them are kind of very tense. Although the more she does it, the less tense it becomes. For example, when she installed that woman into power, when she invaded the city, she just very kind of blasé revealed her identity.
Yeah.
And it felt like she was playing with the spirits a little bit.
It felt like she knew what she was doing, though.
Yes. I think by that point, we really see her become a little more reckless with it.
Yeah.
And a little more drunk with power, because she's been getting away with it for so many years. And everything seems to be working in her favor, regardless of what she does.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just very satisfying to see the descent into, like, this, not necessarily madness, but kind of madness. I really dig it.
Yeah, it was... Okay, yeah. So that scene was the scene I liked when I was reading. And then in retrospect, the scene I liked is when she frames the monk.
That's such a good scene, too. Because I was like, where is this going? And then...
Yeah, because it's so evil in retrospect. Like, she destroyed this man's whole life.
And he was not a great person. He was a really bad person, actually. And
oh, yeah. He was awful. Super bad. But, like, still, she destroyed him.
So Shelley Parker Chan did a really good move here, I think, because it eased us into this idea that Ju is capable of it in a way where we were completely fine with it at first.
Yeah.
And then the more Ju does it, the less fine with it I became.
Yeah.
Especially when Ma is introduced and she's like a very decent person. And the fact that Ma is kind of like, she's way too naive. Like, she's just absolutely way too naive.
Yeah.
I don't know how she survived that long. But having
I think she... It's a good question. I think she survived that long because one of the reasons is because of sexism. Like, women are not taken seriously.
Fair.
And her opinion as a woman is not taken very seriously in this society.
Very, very fair. That's a great point. And she's also smart. Like, don't get me wrong. She's not cunning. Stupid. She is very cunning. Like, spilling the tea on her fiancé's hands all the time. Like,
yeah.
she is extremely cunning. But at the same time...
She's also a little naive.
She's so naive. She likes to believe the best in people. And some people don't deserve that. Especially Ju at the end.
Especially Ju. Probably at any point. Because Ju is just in it for Ju.
And... Oh my god, I love when they first met each other and Ju started just shamelessly flirting. Just at every single moment. And it's like, she's a frat boy. She is such a frat boy. There's no other way to describe her.
Machiavellian frat boy, maybe. And so now, what do you want to see in the sequel?
In the sequel, I actually really want...
You want a siren in the background?
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah.
Is it? It's mostly gone.
It's, yeah.
Okay. In the sequel, I personally want Ju and Ouyang to have another one-on-one, because when they worked together, that was so fun. When Ouyang shot that arrow. Like, two bickering idiots. And that's such a good, like... That's such a good relationship between characters who hate each other. I don't know. It's just always fun.
Yep.
So I want them to come head to head. I want them to align on something.
Yeah.
And I want that something to be very important. And I want them to have slightly different goals on it. That way they have to work together, but also they're slightly in each other's ways.
Yeah. So do you think they're going to end up? Because like Ouyang is reading, is like, betraying the Mongolian forces while Ju is trying to throw them out of China. So do you think they're going to end up allies?
Situationally, maybe. Hopefully. I don't know if they can become allies.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How about you? What do you think? What are you hoping for in book two?
I'm hoping for more moral grayness. I'm hoping that, like... I don't know, and I really like these kind of like Pyrrhic victories that this book likes to give us. And I like the idea that like, it just reminds me of, what's the book series? The First Law, The Blade Itself.
No idea.
Which you probably haven't read.
No.
But there are a series of books where in the end, it's kind of like, I'm trying to put this without spoiling anything, but like every character kind of gets what they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
and none of them are happy for it. And that's kind of what I feel like is happening here. Like, what I would love to see the ending be like. Like, Zhu is emperor and still with Ma, but Ma hates her. And Ouyang has betrayed the Mongols, but Zhu wants nothing to do with him. And it's just like, everyone's gotten what they deserved and no one's happy. And I like that as an ending for what is otherwise a very queer story, because not because I want to see queer people suffer, which...
Are you sure?
I'm sure. It's because I think there needs to be room for that in like queer yes. media. I feel like we talk about so many stories where it's either like, I guess the lesbians die or they live happily ever after.
And there's no nuance.
There's no nuance. There's no, like, they're together, but they're unhappy. And I like the idea of a sad ending.
I like that this is a tragedy. Ending. Yeah.
Yes.
This is absolutely a tragedy.
Yeah.
Everyone is doing things that seem correct. It's not angst, necessarily. Because I recently saw this post on Tumblr. Don't remember where. I think it was, like, a writing Tumblr or something. But someone asked for advice, like, how can I write tragedy and not just angst? And the person who answered the ask, they said a lot of it has to do with agency and just like the characters have to actively not be just reacting to the sadness. Yeah. It's like there has to be a conflict that they're trying to overcome and are failing to do so despite trying their best. And I feel like this has a lot of that potential in it. We did get that with Baru, right? It's like such a good pain. Like it's such an interesting, fresh, refreshing kind of trope.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'll be able to read those books every time because I like my sanity and I'm a huge proponent of happy endings. I just like them. I don't need everything to be dark, but we don't have a lot of dark stuff.
Yeah. Not everything has to be dark, but you can have some fun dark stuff.
Yeah. A little dark stuff is a treat.
Not everything has to be light either.
Mm-hmm. And I think, to a lesser degree, the Locked Tomb, the Locked Tomb series, like, it also has that element to it, where it is a tragedy, and the two main characters just keep missing each other for books upon books upon books, right? Like, there's that element there too, and it's one of my favorite books. But also we talked about Ancillary, and in that book, like, every single book ends with things working out pretty much perfectly.
Interesting.
And I really love that. I mean, in the first one, we talked about it, like, the ending, it was ultimately the best outcome, right? Yeah. It's like playing Mass Effect and getting everything done so you have a perfect ending.
Which is the way I do it.
Exactly. So I really like that too. But this is, I really like this take on queer fiction. And I like that there's like a mix of gender stuff here.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of that. I think also that's why it reminds me of Nine Fox, because Nine Fox and the other books in that trilogy, there's a lot to do with gender in different aspects of it. And it's also not the main story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it is an aspect. It drives the plot a lot. But that's not what the book is about.
Right.
What do you think about the use of fate? Because that is a very, very important part of the book as well.
The use of fate. I don't know. I feel like you're driving at something with this.
Zhu stole her brother's fate.
Yes, stole her brother's fate. But then at the end, she realized that she kind of has her own fate, right?
I don't know. What did you feel about that scene?
I don't know.
I was a little confused. It was ambiguous.
Like, did she decide that her fate, it was kind of, I don't know if she was saying, oh, I'm not Zhu Zhangba, I'm my own person and I've got my own fate. Or she was thinking, I'm going to defy fate and be whatever I want to be. I don't know. Or some mix thereof, or I have no idea.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, because on one hand, on the surface of it, to me, it did feel like she was saying, I'm actually my own person and I do what I want. And everything I've done so far in life has taught me that I'm able to.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, fate and ghosts and ancestors, all of that seems to be a very real thing in this book, right? And having that be a part of it, it is real, right? So we don't know if what she's done has actually doomed her, if it finally right. revealed who she is.
Right.
And it's very interesting because we still don't know. We don't know what effect it's going to have.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it. I really like that. I also like that Ouyang seems to be running away from his fate, unlike Zhu, who's trying to chase it.
Right.
And I also feel like Ouyang, his fate, well, running from it might be a strong word, because he was avoiding it for a while. He didn't want to get rid of his life as it is. But now that Zhu has kind of progressed his plans for revenge, he kind of has to. So maybe he's embracing it. I'm kind of talking myself out of my argument a little bit. Because Zhu's the one running from her fate of nothingness, trying to steal another.
Yeah.
Whereas Ouyang, by the end of the book, is embracing it. I don't know. It's interesting. I think they kind of flipped a lot. Okay. It's a very mirrored narrative.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning, we kind of have very little of Ouyang and a lot of Zhu. And then in the end, Zhu becomes this like mystical figure, while with Ouyang, we figure out who he is. We see his humanity show up a little more. And then, like, we slow down on his narrative and story. Books!
Yes.
Bleep.
Books. Oops, not supposed to say that. Chloe. Freaking books. I'm on cold medicine. Give me a break.
Okay, I'll give you a break. I'll cut it out.
It just felt appropriate.
I have a really
but
fun...
But it was very inappropriate.
Bleep sound that I use.
It's just you saying bleep. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Okay.
All right.
It's
adorable.
Just like you.
oh.
That sounded very sarcastic, but it,
I mean, I did not like that sentence as a genuine comment. After that discomfort, do you have any closing thoughts other than coughing?
I'm going to die real quick. My closing thoughts, I really like this book. Shout out to our friend Sarah, who just gave me a copy of it and said, read this, because I never would have otherwise. Just because I've got so many books to read and it was not on my radar at all. Highly, highly, highly recommend. It's a very good read. It's well written. It flies by. And I look forward to the sequel.
Mm-hmm. So many sequels. So many sequels.
So little time.
My final thought is I like whatever gender stuff Zhu has going on. Very fun, very relatable and interesting. I want more of it. I like whatever form of self-hatred Ouyang is practicing. Very fun to see. And it's like, he's starting to become a good boy in my eyes, despite the atrocities he's done. He's a little meow meow now. And I didn't know
a little
that...
meow meow now. Are we... And I didn't... I'm just going to sit here and process that sentence for a moment.
And I didn't think he would become that by the end of the book. I thought I was actually going to quite dislike him. But I like him. I like him more than Zhu by the end of the book, which I feel is the intention. I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited for it. It's great.
Well, we look forward to it. Hopefully it comes out soon. I don't see anything on Shelley Parkerton's website about it, but this book just came out in 2021. So we'll give you a couple years, Shelley, for now.
And then Chloe's coming after you.
Yes, I'm flying to Australia. Because I think that's where she's from. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Just to mention our social media, our Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest is at @immedialez. Our subreddit is r/immedialez. Our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
Our website is immedialez.com. And you can email us at immedialez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who reaches out, interacts,
and
comments, subscribes.
And send us more recommendations.
Yeah.
Like, it's fun to do a thing that neither of us know.
We need to do Signalis. I acknowledge this, that we've not done Signalis, which was recommended to us. But it's a scary video game. It's hard to play.
I could not get past the first level.
It's hard to play. It's so scary, and it's not an
easy game. I didn't
even
get to the scary part. I just got
lost.
You
can only hold six. Well, yeah, I got a little lost too. You can only hold six items at a time, and I ran out of ammunition, and there's this awful monster chasing me, and it's a tough game. So thank you for ever recommending that. I'm trying, but it's slow going.
I will try. Eventually, I'll get around to it.
I will force her to. Okay.
You say the thing.
What do I say?
I don't remember.
Wait, I thought you said the thing.
There's oh, a usually thing I go, and we'll see you in the next one, but there's nothing to and. So I'll just say, we'll see you in the next one.
And God bless you.